Welcome, everybody, to the Sports Gambling Podcast. I'm your host, Sean, stacking the money green with my partner in picks, Ryan, Real Money Kramer. Ryan, what's happening?
Oh, man, I'm still recovering. Getting old.
Yeah.
Getting old.
Ryan is fresh back from his trip to Vegas. I was out in Catalina for a wedding.
And, it couldn't be more opposite, the two. Like, one place you're just as laid back as could be, and the other place you're just raging the whole time.
Yeah. No, I mean, there was a lot of drinking and stuff going on in Catalina, but it's definitely more of a, I mean, yeah, it's subdued. Obviously, it's a, I got into it with a karaoke DJ at one point.
Oh,
so,
nice.
Yeah. I mean, there was a little, here was the thing. We went to Catalina. We went to this, you know, you're just walking around. There's like five bars. Got really drunk. Then, the couple of girls that we were with were up on the stage, like, singing a song. And my one friend got, you know, insanely hammered, ordered some champagne because it's for our buddy's wedding. So I had a glass of champagne. I went up to give one of the girls the glass of champagne. I said, oh, hey, here's the glass. She turned, didn't see me, knocked the drink out of my hand, landed on the stage. The karaoke DJ. Now, this is a long-haired karaoke DJ. Just, he was, like, all into the karaoke and then just, you know, needle coming off the record player, freaked out, was like grabbing drinks out of everyone else's hands. Like, this is why I don't allow drinks on the stage, and just totally lost his shit. And so I was just like, you're a karaoke DJ. This is part of the gig, dealing with drunk people.
Now, this reminds me of a story. I'm not, it might have been you with me. It might have been someone else I was friends with at the time. Mm-hmm. But essentially, when I first moved out here, of course, we lived on the west side. Down in Culver City.
Yep.
And
West LA.
I had a friend out from the East Coast, so we decided to go out. We hit one of the local bars. This is back when Culver City had like nothing going on. And we stumbled across a bar with karaoke.
Oh, and, yeah. No, I think I was there.
And I believe you and me, Sean, decided it'd be funny if we did I Got You Babe.
Right.
Of course, not taking any bit of it seriously. Well, we were 30 seconds in. We were booed off the stage, and to the point where people were coming up to us afterwards, telling us how disrespectful it was of both Cher and their karaoke scene. It's like, what?
Well, that is great. I mean, you know, people give sports fans a lot of crap, like, oh, hey, you wear the jerseys. What? You think you're part of the team? No, that I know that I'm not a part of the NFL team. I'm doing it as because, yeah, it's fun to wear the jerseys.
Hey, show your colors.
Yeah, it's a you're representing a team. Huh. Obviously, I know I'm a fan. These karaoke people do not realize they're not professional singers. I had the same thing with the one time we did it at Barney's Beanery, another like local place on the west side. And yeah, someone signed me up for Son of a Preacher Man, and I got booed off stage because I can't sing. And it's like, stop taking yourself seriously. This is karaoke. You're supposed to get tuned up.
It's
yell
pretty,
over the songs. That's
pretty,
part of the game.
Yeah, it's pretty. I mean, yeah, I get the same crap from some work friends because we always go to Korean karaoke, which, of course, if you've never been or you're not from L.A., Korean karaoke, you basically get a booth. You feel like you're walking into some sort of whorehouse. You get your own room, and then you can pick whatever songs you want. Of course, I'm going to throw on Born in the USA every time I go, swing the mic around like it's my dick, and scream into the microphone. Well, I guess people don't like that.
I've talked about it even in my stand-up bits that if you do the Born in – the last time we did this, I remember you had Born in the USA, and we're at a karaoke place, and there's a line in Born in the USA where he's talking about being trained for Vietnam, and it's like, where you learn how to kill the yellow man. Like, it's – obviously, you're doing it as a character or whatever. The idea is, like, you're being trained to fight these Vietnamese. But really, in context, it sounds horribly racist.
And it's a pretty funny because they don't use any of the real music. It's all these, like, horribly, like, Asian tech or electronic remixes or
rendition. Yeah, if you remember,
rendition.
Like, it's almost like essentially a MIDI track, like, where
exactly.
It sounds like the song, but it's a little bit off. And then they have a giant screen where they're playing music videos, but they're not American music videos. Instead, it's just, it's completely random. It's like a random music video of just Asian characters interacting. Like, they could be holding hands, and you're singing, like, Who Let the Dogs Out, and they're just, like, aimlessly walking around on the beach.
Those music videos are great.
They make no attempt to match the videos to the song. It's completely random and kind of adds to the overall entertainment value. So, Ryan, give me your little gambling recap from your recent Vegas trip.
So, for some reason, we decided to go out. So, so my girlfriend Lindsay, her birthday is on 7/11, much like yours, Sean.
Yep. 7/11.
Yep. Happy birthday, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I got something for you. I forgot to bring it over.
All right.
So we decide she wants to go out and be in Vegas for her birthday. So we go out Wednesday night and we get out of the plane and it felt like a blow dryer was in the wind was probably blowing at 25 miles an hour. And at 7 o'clock at night, it was probably 110 degrees.
Oh, yeah. That's, if you've never been to Vegas, I mean, you can do the Vegas in July math, but I have a vivid memory of one of the first trips I took to Vegas when we were coming back like 4:30 in the morning and my eyes were hurting because like the juices in my eyes were like warm. And I look up and I see, you know, one of those bank clock in time. And it says 4:35, 1:06.
Well, that's like the first time. Inevitably, the first time you drive to Vegas in the summer, you stop in Baker, you see the thermometer saying it's like 110, and you get out, and like Sean said, your eyes hurt. It's this really crazy sensation. Unlike the humidity where you're just sweating all the time, it's so dry that you're losing fluid from your eyeballs.
Yeah, it's almost you can just feel like this giant hot sponge upon you just soaking up your fluids.
Yeah, so we get there and it's hot as shit. Now, luckily, the normal cab line is like a 15-minute cab line, and that's just brutal in that heat. There was no cab line. First time I've ever been to Vegas.
Oh wow!
We get in the cab.
Well, quick aside, last cab line last time I was out in Vegas with you, we saw one Rich Eisen in the cab line.
So we get in the cab, and immediately, so the AC is blasting. Immediately, me and Lindsay look at each other, and you almost couldn't breathe. This cab driver smelled so bad. The air blowing from the AC was just like, I wanted to breathe out of my mouth, but then the taste was going to get in my,
oh God.
It was unbelievable. I mean, it was almost to the point where I wanted to say, can you turn those vents the other direction, please?
Can you turn down your body odor?
It was, I mean, he smelled bad. So we get there and, some of Lindsay's family was getting out that same night. So we check in, of course. Cut the line, because I'm a, you know, VIP.
Yep, big time in it.
Get to our room, and, you know, they're not going to be there for a little bit, so I'm like, hey, what do you want to do? You want to go get a drink, or should we go gamble? Of course we're going to go gamble, so we go to the craps table.
Yeah, why pay $8 for a Bud Light when you can get a free Bud Light?
In hindsight, I paid $1,500 for, like, two Red Bull vodkas, so, yeah, table was really cold, lose a bunch of money. So this leads to that. They get there. We do some drinking. You know, nothing really to write home about. Thursday, again, not much going on. Get a nice dinner at STK. That's always nice.
Now, which one is that? Is that
STK is the SPE restaurant. Okay. There's one in LA too.
I thought it was associated with a certain chef.
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, I'm sure there's a famous chef there, but, so then, that night, I kind of sneak off. Lindsay's doing her own thing. I sneak off to go play some blackjack. Now, as you know, Sean, a Vegas trip is not complete unless I sneak off to the $100 double deck blackjack table.
Yep. I've been a part of that many a times.
So I sit down at the double deck, decide to look like a baller, cash in $2,000. I then proceed to lose 10 hands in a row. Yeah.
Wow.
Down to my last 500, I played a couple $200 hands. Throw all the 500 out there. Boom. Blackjack.
Oh, wow. You're back in business.
I'm like, all right. I'm like, what do you think? Let it ride. Let it ride. $1,250. Boom. 20. I'm like, oh, yeah. Dealer's showing a six.
Oh.
You could write this story.
Oh, my God.
Or could you? Normally, you'd be like, oh, he's going to flip over a 5 and then get a 10, right? No.
They slow roll it to like a...
Nope. He flips over a 2. So I'm like, all right, 10.
8.
10.
10. You're out of there with an 18.
What does he flip over? Another 2. Like, all right, now he's got 10. Just push. Just push.
Yeah, you got 1250 on. You'll take a push.
What happens next? Another 2.
12. Wow, 12. You're back in it for the win.
I'm all right.
Even an 8. You're 8. 8, you're pushing. So 10, you're busting.
You're not going to even believe this story. Next card, a 2.
So you're at
He's got 14 now.
He's got 14.
Yep.
Now, traditionally, so yeah, he's drawn all these small cards. So statistically, you're just feeling a monkey.
He's got four twos in a row.
Meaning a face card coming up.
Four twos in a row. Next card, an ace. Now he's got 15.
So 15, you're almost back to 16.
At this point, I'm like, all right, he's going to bust. He's got to bust. So we're sitting at 15, right? 15 versus my 20. And I'm just like, monkey! I'm drunk, and I'm like, I'm banging on the table. The pit, both pit bosses are watching, because they're just like, next card, ace.
Oh my, you're back at 16.
So now he's got 16.
You have.
He just drew six cards. So he has seven cards. I've never seen a dealer have seven cards and need to take another hit.
No. I mean, nothing's ringing. That's insane.
No, sorry. He has eight cards. No, sorry. Yeah, six cards or seven cards. So I'm like, all right, big card. Flips it over, five. 21.
Wow.
I was just like, oh, you could tell the dealer was just like, oh my God.
Yeah. Because
you could tell the dealer had never seen that before. Neither of the pit bosses.
And they don't want to see that. Because if you hit that 1250 bet, he knows he's getting a green 25 immediately in his little.
So he hit an eight card 21, which I stayed and talked to the guy a little bit more. And he was explaining, the pit boss was actually saying that at some casinos, they'll have bonus bets for that, and that pays something crazy. That's like one of those.
It's like 1,000 to 1, yeah. I would think, right? Even on the bonus.
It's like 1,000 or 1,500 to 1 bonus. And I was just like, oh my goodness.
Which is like a crazy bonus that you would never pay.
So I walk away thinking, oh great, I should have just gone to sleep, when Lindsay, left.
Yeah.
That would have been good, cause it was like 4 a.m. So I'm like, all right, time to reset the trip. I'm down. So next day I'm like, all right, Lindsay. This is Friday now. A lot of her friends are coming out from Vegas or from LA. They're driving. I was like, all right, I am not, I'm not doing anything crazy. Let's go to Caesars and play Pi Gas so I can get my table massages.
Yeah. I mean, for any people looking to just gamble and have that experience where you get a lot of drinks, you hang out for a while. Pi Gas has always been, and I say to Ryan, I never get excited about Pi Gas because I never win big amounts, but you can play for like, if you have $100 and you're playing even $15 Pi Gal, generally you'll be at that table for like an hour.
I was even going to say, assuming you're not playing the bonus, which you shouldn't if you're playing small amounts of money. Me and Lindsay sat down. She cashed in $200. I cashed in $1,000 at a $25 table, and we played for hours.
Yeah, and so she's got 200.
She has eight bets, and she...
Because the majority of the time you push, so you're just sitting there getting cocktails.
So we're playing. I get the massage girl over. She's, giving a good massage. I'm losing a little bit. I get down to my last 400 or 500, and I decide, I'm like, all right, I'm gonna make a big bet here. I throw 500 on the bet. I got 10 on the bonus. Getting the massage. Cards come out. Squeezing them out. First two cards. King. I'm like, all right.
So explain real quick if you've never played Pi Gal.
So Pi Gal is poker with seven cards. You make a two-card hand and a five-card hand. Only rule is your two-card hand can't beat your five-card hand. To win, you have to win on both hands. To lose, you have to lose on both hands.
So what usually happens is
your five-card will beat the dealer's five-card, but your two-card will lose.
Yeah.
A lot of pushing. So I squeeze out two kings. So I already know I got a decent hand. Next two card, 10-10. So now I got two pair. It's a strong hand already. Next card, just an ace. I'm like, all right, whatever. Next card, king. So now I have a full house. I know I'm getting paid 5 to 1 on the bonus, and I'm going to be able to play three of a kind in the back and a pair up top. Next card, another king.
Wow.
I get four of a kind with a pair up top.
Woo.
It's almost an unbeatable hand.
And you're hitting a sweet bonus, right?
Yeah, so I play it. I end up winning the $500 bet, and I win 50 to 1 on the bonus, another $500. We play for a little bit longer. I end up leaving the table up a decent. We both won some money over there. So then it comes around where her friends have come into town. Everyone wants, we're gonna go out to a club. So first we decide we're gonna play some craps. Of course, I'm like, all right, guys, I haven't been doing well at the craps table. Go ahead, and I start watching. And of course,
now this is just hilarious.
One of the girls rolls.
Ryan has no ability to watch people gamble.
Yeah, so I'm watching.
Himself.
I'm just like,
Which is tough for anyone to do, so but I for decided, Ryan, who has a bankroll, it's really tough.
I decided to go get a... I hadn't eaten in a while. I'm going to go grab a bite. So I come back, and I'm like, how's the table? I see the same person's rolling. 20 minutes ago, and I'm like, oh, the table not doing well? Nope, she's been rolling the whole time.
Oh, no, you'd think it had already gone around.
Ends up rolling a four-point fire bet, which I would have won $250 on that, plus probably... I don't know. Conservatively, $2,500 on the roll.
Yeah.
So I'm like, ah, whatever. So then we're gonna at this point, it's like 1 a.m. They want to go to a club. So we're going to go check out Dre's, which is an after hours club. And what used to be the Barbary Coast. I don't know if you remember, Sean.
Yep. I threw up
the first time we ever got comped, Sean.
Yeah.
We all playing $5 blackjack, took them for like probably four or five grand.
Yeah, we had a nice
run. Almost kicked us out for high-fiving too furiously.
Yep.
And we got comped a $5 steak and egg breakfast.
Yep. And I gave my chips to your girlfriend, Lindsay. And then a couple hours later, tried to pry them out of her hands and said I was kidding earlier.
Yeah. So we go over there. And then there's like 9 girls, 4 guys, right? Surely we're going to be able to get into this club. No problem. Bouncer's like, all right. I don't know, $30 a head.
We're like, we got 9 chicks. Yeah, we're going to be drinking.
Oh, no, they got to pay too. We're like, all right. You know, like, fuck you, whatever. We'll just go. And then one of Lindsay's friends who's like really into going to clubs, I guess, dude, like literally he almost gets into a fight with the bouncer. Anyway, so we all decide to call it a night. We're all going to get up early. We got a cabana at the pool the next day, Saturday. So we all do that. Everyone gets up with some breakfast, starts rolling down to the pool around 11. 10, 11. Got this cabana, pretty cool setup. It's got a TV in it, some couches, a table, and start drinking, of course, right?
Yeah, it's Vegas.
Buckets of beers. We're hanging out in the pool. There's gorilla juice heads everywhere. got a bunch of volleyballs going around. There's going to be a booty shaking contest a little later.
Oh, yes.
Everything's good to go, right?
It's all lining up for a great day.
Yeah, so... The guys in the cabana next to us come over and they're like, oh my God, like, it's someone's birthday. That's awesome. And then they're like, the guy kind of like off to the side, like, who's the old lady? I'm like, oh, that's the birthday girl's mom. And he's like, this guy is so awestruck and by the fact that a mother would be getting wasted in Vegas with her daughter. He's like, I'm buying you drinks all night or all day. So they end up buying us like, these are some rich, I don't know, they're rich dudes. They start just buying us drinks. So we're all getting hammered. Like, everyone's reaching like blackout status. And, so we watched the booty shaking contest. This one big black chick just worked it. But then this white chick came out and like she got down on her knees and like wanted to show the whole pool her like birth canal, you know? It was intense. Like she was going for it. So after that, everyone's really drunk. I'm in the pool with, Diamond Jim, Lindsay's uncle who lives in Vegas.
Yeah.
He's moved to Vegas after winning $380,000 on a scratch off. I guess he thinks, you know, he hit it big.
That is a big payday.
Proceeded to lose it all. He actually admitted that he has no more money. he's drunk to the point where he's actually, we're hanging out of the pool and at one point he, as if he's leaning over to lean on the ledge of the pool, but there's no ledge there. We're in the middle of the pool. He proceeds to just pass out in the water almost. He went underwater and you see the air bubbles coming up and he comes up and he's like, oh, I thought there was a ledge there to run on. Lindsay's other uncle who's gay is like shaking his ass, like just jumping around like a gay, like it's, and then her mom is just like, has that, like, you know, lights have been shut off, look in her eyes, just wandering out of the pool with her giant flamingo cup filled with a Long Island. It's probably...
Now, where's the old man? What's he doing?
Who's the... Oh, he stayed home. He didn't want to come.
Oh, he didn't want to come to Vegas?
Yeah.
Or... Oh, okay.
I guess it's probably a combination that he's not a raging alcoholic and maybe he's not a big fan of Vegas. Who knows?
Yeah.
So we're hanging out the pool, and Lindsay's mom starts splashing the water a little bit. You're in a pool, whatever.
Yeah.
Everyone's having fun. Well, she splashes this girl, and this girl's like, who's in the pool? Like, stop splashing me. Or stop splashing water. You're getting people wet. Or you're getting water and drinks. And Lindsay's mom just, like, turns over, like a sassy, like, 25-year-old. If you don't want to get wet, get out of the pool. All right, so this girl... proceeds to get up in Lindsay's mom's face and push her.
Oh, wow. How old's this chick? Like a younger girl?
25.
Okay.
Lindsay's mom's just like, what's going on? And we're all kind of like, yo, chill out. Like,
she's in her 50s, right?
Everyone's like having a good time. It's just like, relax.
Yeah.
And then Lindsay is like, Lindsay, obviously you don't know Lindsay, but Sean can attest. Lindsay gets, Lindsay could probably outdrink most of the people listening to this podcast. Yeah. I would put up money that said she could outdrink most people.
That's no insult to the, you know, the people listening to this podcast.
No. She gets drunk after two beers and then can drink for 8 hours after that.
Right. It's a weird combination where
she has that gene.
Yeah. Well, it's like she's as drunk as she is after three beers as she is after 19 beers.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't, she gets it in this like, you know, kind of just wild, fun, drunk mode early on, but then stays in that, and it doesn't, like, most chicks will hit a wall where they just pass out, or it gets really, you know, really bad, I guess, but, and Lindsay just, like, she just plateaus early and just maintains it for a long period.
So, Lindsay gets up, like, what are you doing? And I'm like, everyone just relax. And then out of nowhere, her younger sister, who's slightly more ghetto, still lives in Newport News area, Hampton, where, of course, of Michael Vick
home
and Allen
Iverson. And
she comes over and attempts to do like a jump, a flying like right hook to the chick's face. I catch her. We defuse the situation. Everything's cool. And then this little juicehead dude comes to the side of the pool. He's like, man, fuck you guys. What are you trying to start something? And it's like, all right, dude, settle down.
Yeah.
No, man, fuck you. So the security comes over, they kind of separate it, and then he comes back, and it's like, all right, look, dude, you need to fucking relax. Then there's like, in the flamingo pool, there's like a little ledge throughout a lot of the edge of the pool that's maybe like 3 inches deep. So I hop out on that, I'm like, look, dude, I stand up thinking like, all right, I'm gonna alpha male this bitch.
Yeah.
I get up, so I already think he's short. I get out of the pool, this guy's up to my like, his head maybe hits like the bottom of my neck. And I'm like, you're not going to do shit. So that gets diffused. And then they decide, all right, time to give Lindsay the cake. So they get the cake, cut a couple pieces. And then her sister's like, all right, we're just going to, she takes a giant handful of the cake and just smashes it. And then we destroyed this cabana. There was cake everywhere.
Bet.
There was shit everywhere. There was shrimp cocktail everywhere.
Oh God.
We were getting in trouble for getting in the pool with cake everywhere. Lindsay was so drunk, she didn't think to piss in the pool. She got out of the pool and just sat on this ledge next to the cabana. So that was just a mess. They finally kick us out of the pool when the pool's closing. I mean, I think they weren't going to close for like 30 minutes, but they could see that, like,
yeah,
this possible situation. I had gone back to the room, but Lindsay's friends were with her, and apparently they got out of the elevator, and Lindsay had been saying she had to go to the bathroom, and she just sat down on the carpet floor on the 28th floor of the Flamingo and just started pissing. Yeah, it was pretty intense.
Wow.
So yeah, that's pretty much the end of the fun stuff in Vegas. Everyone passed out except for a couple of us. We stayed up, and then everyone wakes up. They want to go out and do stuff, and we're like, holy shit. It's
yeah.
2 a.m. So yeah, and then Sunday was pretty mild. Most people were dipping out of town, but.
Sounds like a pretty intense Vegas
trip.
Oh,
one thing, this wouldn't be very funny to anyone else, but the first night, Kristen, our good friend Kristen.
Yes.
She got completely hammered and, kept reminding me how I should be thankful to her because she muled my weed out. and proceeded to try to almost, she tried to fight me. She got like really scary blackout drunk and had to look like she was going to smash a beer bottle over my head.
Well, that's Vegas.
Yeah. So, all in all, good trip. Lost
good trip.
Money. First, you know, it took, what, my sixth trip before I lost money in Vegas?
Yeah.
So I'm not complaining.
Hey, that was a heat check. That was a heat check Vegas
trip. I also, you know, I got a situation lined up. I got, you know, now I'm like a elite level comp man, so.
Yeah, you got our Super Hilton contest.
Oh, that's right.
Ticket registered.
Of One of my orders of business while out there was to sign up for the super contest. Now, this is actually a pretty funny story, too. So, for those who don't know, the Las Vegas Hotel now, their sports book, probably
the Hilton.
Probably the sports book of sports books. They have a football handicapping contest. Of course, we did it last year. And the way it works is, you pick 5 games every week, but there's one stipulation. You have to submit the picks in person in Las Vegas. So, of course, we don't live in Las Vegas, so we have to hire a proxy. Someone who's going to submit our picks for us. Now, our proxy is a guy named Andy. And looks a lot like, what's his name? The sidekick for Conan.
Andy Richter?
Oh, no, he's a mix between Andy Richter and Louis.
Louis C.K.?
No, Louis Anderson. And that's a smart little guy.
That's the most. That's like the least complimentary combo you can come up with.
Yeah, if you look him up, Andy Ice-Co or Ice-Key, he's like a gambling guy. He does stuff for pregame. He's got his own site. I'll plug it, Logical Approach. Check it out. he's got his NFL season total stuff up. Anyway, we meet, and he looks rushed, like he's got to be somewhere. And I'm like, all right, let's get this done. So he decides he's going to sign up. Well, there's only one manager on duty, so the manager's going back and forth between setting halftime lines, and Andy just loses it. He's like, come on, man, where's the service? Where's the service, man? I got to be somewhere. I got to. And he freaks out a little bit. So Andy signs up. He was the fourth contestant to enter the contest. We are, of course, number five.
The money plays.
Entry is money plays. And, you can follow us there once the season starts. But
yeah, we'll have the running tally of.
Yeah, I meant to tweet out a picture of our entry, but yeah, you know, $1,500.
Yeah.
Anyone can join.
Anyone can join, but only the skilled can win,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And if you're going to be out there the weekend of August 24th, 25th, they're having a little golf tournament and, like, banquet, and they're going to raffle off some free entries.
Oh, wow.
I might be out there, so maybe we'll have two entries this year, Sean.
No, dude, that'd be awesome. All right, Ryan. Well, let's take care of a couple of sports news and notes. Major League Baseball All-Star Game happened, and, yes, of course, like I had talked about on the previous podcast, they hit the Prince Fielder Home Run Derby, as tweeted out at Gambling Podcast.
Yeah, that was a nice pick.
And we also, I think, now you were big on the under.
Here's what I suggested. I'm not sure if we mentioned it, but this is just general all-star game betting advice. In general, always take the underdog.
Yep.
Of course, the underdog won.
Right, but I don't even think we had a strong play on the underdog.
But just in general, if you're going to take a side, take the underdog. But I was all over the unders. Unders on a couple props and under on the game. It didn't look good early, but it ended up going under. But our big bet, Sean, of course.
The prop we love the most.
What did I say? Will there be a triple plus 240? I felt really strongly about it.
Yes.
Not only was there one triple, Sean.
There was three.
There were three triples. So you're welcome, America.
We're just giving away free money, Ryan. And it's amazing. Speaking of that, we're going over to the let's talk a little golf here.
All right.
Next major coming up, the British Open. British Open is also it's kind of a great way to start off the if you're a drinker and you got DirecTV,
yep,
you can always kind of stay up late and see.
And you live on the West Coast.
Well, right. Yeah, I guess
1:30 a.m. it starts on
The East Coast.
No, 4:30 on the East Coast. 1:30 on the West Coast, I believe.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Coverage starts on Thursday morning.
So, yeah, if you're going to stay up super late Wednesday, you can catch some early tee times of the Thursday guys going off.
Now, Sean, I should correct you. It's the Open Championship. This is another scenario where Britain still thinks they're the shit. And they feel like they have to put the British part before their championship.
Well, that's good. That's really working out for them, clearly. Yeah. Tiger Woods already complaining about the conditions of the golf course. Tiger Woods, I'm seeing a 13-2 favorite, it sounds like.
So if Tiger Woods, the best golfer in the world, says that areas of the rough are unplayable, I could only imagine what that is. If I hit in the grass 4 inches deep, it's unplayable.
Yeah, and
did you see the pictures?
No, I didn't look at any of
the
visuals.
There's some area where the rough is 3 feet tall. Like, there's, like, grass three and a half feet tall. It's absolutely crazy. It's a short course, but.
Right. And that's why, you know, in general, in these golfing things, and we've talked about it overall, we don't feel like there's a lot of value in taking these heavy favorites. We're not in Tiger Woods' heyday anymore. You gotta just find a dog, ride it, maybe sprinkle a couple different bets on some longer shot guys.
That brings up a good point. I actually pulled the trigger.
Yeah, so did I.
Tiger Woods.
Oh, you did? Oh, okay.
Tiger Woods will not win a major. Of course, two left. Tiger Woods will not win a major at minus 500.
Now, what'd you throw on that?
$1,000.
$1,000 to win $200. That feels good. And also, obviously, after he doesn't win this first major, then you have You can just play the field too. You can always bet the field bet. You can bet around. Like you'll have a lot of options to cover it.
Yeah, I'm not concerned because I don't. I mean, he has no chance to win this tournament. If anything, he might have a chance to win
I think this really, we talked about a couple weeks back, we like Graham McDowell. And to me, it makes a lot of sense for a couple reasons. Obviously, because I feel like it's a total toss-up. Graham McDowell teeing off at 33-1. He's a solid player, and he also has experience playing British courses. I feel like that's going to definitely benefit these guys. They know the weather. They know the rain. You don't want to go with like a Rory McIlroy.
It's the links style courses, which I think means shorter, large greens, really
straight away,
rolling.
But just real rough roughs, and you're dealing with the weather constantly.
So yeah, I made it a point to go to the sports book and check out what's Vegas doing with these golf odds just to see. Because I was like, maybe I'll grab Graham McDowell if the odds are better out here. So to my surprise, Graham McDowell, I think I told you, he was either 12 or 14-1. He was the second favorite after he was the third or fourth favorite. I think it was Tiger Woods, Lee Westwood, Luke Donald, and then Graham McDowell.
Well, you know what it is, Ryan? All these sharps tune into the podcast.
So, yeah.
Laying money heavy in Vegas, they got to cover their asses.
So do yourself a favor. Grab Graham McDowell. It's going off online at anywhere from 33 to 30-1 I've seen. I've seen it as low as 15-1, though, online. So if you can find it at the 30-1 price, I love it.
Yeah, and this is another point we're just hammering home, is that if you're going to bet golf, shop your odds, because there is so much variance in golf. In NFL lines, what do you see? Maybe a point and a half between the lowest. Maybe you see -2 somewhere, and maybe you see -3.5. That's as much variance as you'll see between offshore and local Vegas books. There's a huge difference between betting on a guy at 12-1 and 35-1. It's insane.
Huge, huge difference.
So I think anyone else we're talking about? I saw Mickelson at, and I already threw 15 on that. To win 495, I mean, come on.
Yeah, I threw 50 on it. This is my standard golf bet at this point.
Now, who else? Is there anyone else, Ryan? Just look at the kind of odds that we can bring up. Maybe there's some value at Phil Mickelson. Just because he's such a good golfer at 30-1.
Yeah, you can get him at 30-1. I don't know. Tiger Woods, there's never value in Tiger. Lee Westwood, he's playing really well. He's British. He definitely has experience. He's going off at 13-1. Luke Donald, another guy, British. Nothing exciting about those plays, though. That's 15.5-1. That's not horrible, actually. McIlroy 15-1, Harrington another, he's Irish, right?
Yeah, but see, why would you not take a Graham McDowell the way McIlroy's playing?
Now, here's one that kind of pops out to me. Now, of course, Jason Duffner's been playing well. That's our guy we picked. He could hit a putt, but German Martin Keimer, he doesn't play well in the American courses because they're longer, but he's got a real, real disciplined game. Doesn't have the huge. You don't want to bet on a distance guy at this course, it sounds like, from the research I've done. And Martin Keimer is going off at 40-1. He seems to always. He's a great player. I think he was number one in the world at one point. And he's got a real, real disciplined game. And I don't think he missed a lot of fairways. He feels to me at 40-1 like a guy I might grab.
So we're looking, as far as betting the British Open, it sounds like the formula to go with is a guy who has a disciplined approach.
Well, Graham McDowell, he's got the best green or fairways and regulation on the tour.
So we're taking a guy with the best fairways and regulation, a guy who has experience taking the links courses.
You can't miss the fairway. That's the bottom line.
No. Yeah, like we're talking about the rough conditions, it seems like a lock. All right, Ryan, let's touch over on the NFL side briefly.
Real quick, if you want to take the defending champ, Darren Clark, 200-1.
Or maybe throw in some money on John Daly, just because it's John Daly.
Is John Daly playing?
I thought he was.
150-1.
Yeah, throw $2 on John Daly.
Yeah, it seems like not a bad. I honestly might just bet Graham McDowell this time. I might not go with a second guy.
I might throw $5 on Daly. John Daly. Yeah, he's not a fun guy. All right, so real quick, Ryan, this is the NFL arrest season. Oh. Basically, between mini camps and training camp, this is when guys like to get drunk, commit domestic assault, domestic battery, DWI. Of course, our main man, Dez Bryant, taking over where Michael Irvin left off, being the number 88 receiver and involved in some incidents. Sounds like now I thought the stereotype was that you couldn't make fun of a black guy's mom. You know, that was the ultimate insult. Now, meanwhile, Dez Bryant, according to his mom in the 911 tape, is trying to kill him. Now, sadly, as much as I don't want to see anyone injured, it does make me pretty happy that it's a Dallas Cowboy. And if you had to ask me, Ryan, if it was up to me.
I'm listening.
If it was up to me and you said, hey, Sean, I'm going to either throw your mom down a flight of stairs or kill your dog. Hey, as much as I love my dog, I would say, you know, hey, at the end of the day, it's people versus animals.
That makes sense.
Well, because, you know, now Michael Vick's biography's coming out, so we have to, you know, re-talk about this story once again. And the big quote from the Michael Vick biography was that he intended to lie to Roger Goodell about dogfighting. Yeah, no shit. Think he was going to be straightforward. He had some hilarious quotes in there that he's like, instead of studying the Atlanta Falcons playbook, I was studying which dogs were better at killing each other. It was pretty funny just in the in the absurdity of it. So, yeah, you got Dez Bryant committing domestic violence on his mom, allegedly. Marshawn Lynch getting a DUI. Jason Kidd also getting a DUI. And it sounded like the accident Jason Kidd was involved with was kind of serious.
Well, and apparently, not only was he so drunk he drove into a telephone pole and didn't know where he was, but apparently a friend of his helped him to his car. Like, he couldn't even walk to his car.
Yeah. Well, generally, if you don't remember the accident, you're crashing into something, you're not in a great state of mind to flee the scene. Doomerville, also in trouble.
Yeah, a little road rage where he flashed a gun, then told the cop he didn't have a gun, and then the cop proceeded to find the gun in his car.
I love that math. Yeah, obviously we're going to check you for the gun.
It's just so dumb.
Yeah. These guys, it's such a, I don't know, I understand, let's say I understand not taking a taxi cab, you know, where you're not making a lot of money, and you're like, oh, I got it, but come on, man. This should be the classic. Come
in this
on,
order, if you're a rich guy, this is the order of things that amenities I would have in my life.
Well, also
number one,
driver.
Number two, personal chef. And then if you're a football player, maybe number three is like guy who holds your gun for you.
Yeah,
right?
Guy who holds your gun and your weed for you.
I mean, you can.
The thing is, you fill out an entourage. The driver is the first position. Look at Turtle in Entourage. He's the only guy who had an actual job.
I mean, at the end of the day, you could probably just find a really good cook and hire him to hold your gun and drive you.
Yeah, and smoke weed.
You're cheap.
Yeah, if you just tell him, hey, make my food.
Yeah.
You can get as high as you want, and you can carry this gun around and drive me around. If anything goes wrong, it's on you, but I'm going to pay you pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, you're a rich guy. It's like, okay, I'm going to pay this guy.
I know a lot of guys who like smoking weed, driving, and being good chefs.
What do you think a full-time driver gets? Like a driver on retainer?
It could be like $100,000. Right. I wouldn't be surprised, right? $2,000 a week.
So let's say you don't want to pay that. You know the NFL has a car service. Well, the other leagues might have this too. The NFL has a car service that any NFL player can call. At any time. I think it's in any of the states where an NFL team exists, or anywhere probably. You can pick up the phone and get a ride.
Yeah, or you can find any sort of cab.
Pretty crazy.
Whatever, and then they're also just like, hey, I got money, I can get a lawyer, and it probably isn't a big deal until you kill someone or something crazy.
Unless you're in Florida and that person's an illegal immigrant, and then. Then you have to willingly do jail time so the public doesn't hate you so much.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that part of the story.
Dante Stallworth, yeah, that was part of – I think he like
– he got off and he said, no, I want to serve 30 days in jail. Like he didn't have to serve any jail time.
Well, I mean, maybe Dante Stallworth should be getting more – I mean, you don't have to do jail and you're doing it. I'm sure it sounds like he felt guilty about it.
Yeah.
Okay, Ryan, let's see. Obviously, Olympics coming up. We'll probably get into a more in-depth Olympics podcast.
Yeah, the Olympics Well, what we should do a preview now. I believe the Olympics start the 27th, right?
Oh, wow. Okay. So maybe this will be the last
now,
one.
Of course, the U.S. just struggled against Brazil.
They won by 11 points, but yeah.
The big news, did you see Barack Obama and Michelle Obama not kiss on the kiss cam?
Well, that's weird. I saw that as news, but then I saw a video of them kissing on
the
kiss
cam. Yeah, they went back to him later.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
they gave the president a second chance.
All right. That's hilarious. No, I didn't see, because I'd heard that, and then I Googled that, and the video came up of them kissing, and I was trying to.
Yeah, it's pretty funny, this whole, like, it's basically Charles Barkley and Michael Jordan saying this team sucks, and this team saying that they could, Kobe's like, yeah, we could beat them. Now it's such a hilarious, like, you could tell nothing's going on in sports when we've been talking about this for 2 weeks now.
Yeah, this is a big story, or obviously the Penn State story, Joe Paterno, as I talked about many times. He was obviously culpable. You didn't need to bring in the FBI.
Wow. Did you? So this independent investigator, the Free Group.
Yeah.
Did you see the family's response?
Jay Paterno?
No, the family is filing a suit against the Free Group. And in the statement, it says he declared his findings as if they were facts.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like they were facts.
Right.
Like, what is going on here?
Well, I mean, I don't know.
I see what they're doing. They want to defend his name, blah, blah, blah.
If you're Jay Paterno, you're Jay Paterno. I understand why Jay Paterno defends Joe Paterno. I would probably blindly defend my dad.
Sure.
And you
I don't know, though. Think about this.
But, Ryan, if it's your dad and if your whole identity is wrapped up in your dad, you could understand why he would defend him or look
for... You're defending a pedophile.
Well, he's looking, I'm telling you, his psychology. He's looking for any reasoning why Joe Paterno didn't do the right thing or wasn't aware. He's looking for the ultimate excuse.
Here's the thing. If you help...
I don't understand everyone else at Penn State. You should be angry at Joe Paterno. He's about to destroy your football program. The NCAA is talking about giving Penn State the death penalty.
Yeah, they're not going to get the death penalty. I don't think so. But yeah,
who is that that college in Texas that
SMU.
Got
SMU?
SMU.
That was just for paying people.
You're just paying Eric Dickerson. You're not covering up 14 years of letting, and you're facilitating a pedophile.
There's two things that you couldn't help your buddy out of, right? Rape and murder.
Yes.
Any other crime? Okay. You help,
but this wasn't about helping a buddy out. It was about protecting the honor of the program and protecting himself from the negative publicity.
It was also about letting him operate his pedophile operation. I mean, he allowed him. All right, so let's say you find this out and you want to cover it up. You don't let him keep. Don't let him keep the kids foundation. Don't let him keep having kids around.
Yeah, well, and here's the thing. Okay, let's say your thing is, I found this out, I don't want him to go to jail. But you gotta realize, you can't stop this. How are you gonna stop this? And not only did you not actively stop it, you allowed it. He was bringing kids that you knew he was fucking to these bowl games.
Yeah. So,
not a good person.
Have you seen Mystic River?
No.
Sean Penn's character plays like a minor crime boss in Boston. Tim Robbins. Accused of being a pedophile. He handles it like most people should. Takes him out to the river and shoots him in the back of the head.
I mean, in a way, what Paterno did was almost worse than what Sandusky did. Because I feel like Sandusky, and this is not making an excuse for his actions at all, but I feel like, you know, even when Sandusky got caught that first time, he said, like, I wish I was dead. I'm sure he does not want to be attracted to kids. He's a dog with rabies.
Yeah.
Now Joe Paterno and everyone else at the president's, all these other people, you're supposed to be sane, decent people. Not even like a leader or whatever, just a common decency to make this happen and to make a move and to actively, not only did you not, even if that first story was true of, okay, I passed along to the police and they didn't build a case and so I'm not the police. Okay, maybe there's some deniability in that story, but how it came out that he actively facilitated and actively helped cover it up, That is disgraceful.
Yeah, look, you catch them once, you tell them whatever happens again, you're done.
No, but you got to realize you can't do that with a pedophile. You can't do that with a pedophile. How are you going to ever stop him from seeing a kid again?
Sure.
They didn't even – okay, and maybe you give him a little bit of credibility with that. They didn't even try to figure out who that kid was that he was doing that to.
Yeah.
So there was – you know, that's the biggest finding in the Free Report, blatant disregard for the victims. That's the biggest – that's the biggest problem.
Yeah, I mean, I if I found out that my dad had been like laundering a pedophile or helping a pedophile operate freely, I don't know if I would blindly defend him.
It's got to be tough too now that he's dead, and you were brought up as.
I think it's easier to not defend him now that he's dead.
I don't know. I guess I would want answers from my dad, and then I couldn't get answers from my dad. It's hard to, in the same way that people defend the Catholic Church, when you grew up with something that
Or Michael Jackson.
Yeah, when you grew up with something that you've been told your entire life is good and right.
No, it's pretty black and white. I mean, I see your argument, but...
No, I'm not, I'd like to think I would have enough sanity to think, hey, my dad committed this, but to admit that your dad was complicit, and not only complicit, but actively helped a pedophile.
But don't you...
That rocks your foundation to such a degree that I think it's hard to accept.
Don't you think this law... So, all right, this is a news story right now. It's probably going to go away until the NCAA sanctions come out, and then whatever. I feel like their lawsuit is just going to drag this through the mud even more.
Yeah, I don't know what they're... Well, they're... They're in insane denial, as are many people in Penn State. Insane denial. I don't know how you're from Penn State and get upset that they renamed it Paternoville to Nittanyville.
People are upset about that?
Oh, they were outraged on Facebook.
Well, I guess I could see the wanting to defend your college. I mean, it's really annoying when people come up and try to bring up the shooting at Virginia Tech. And it's like, whatever, that's an isolated incident, right? So I could only imagine what it's like, the fact that you're the person that represents your school turned out to be a, you know, complicit in the...
He's an associate.
Yeah.
He's an associate to a pedophile. And here's the thing. Yeah, I get it. It sucks.
So how... Could he... If he was still alive, could he go to jail?
I don't see how you could not charge. There are going to be...
I mean, at the... Cause
more...
Like, if you shot someone and killed someone, Sean, and gave me the gun, I'm going to jail.
If you actively, it's the same way you're accessory to a murder. If you actively knew that I was murdering people and did not do anything to stop that or report it, you're an accessory to murder. You could be an accessory to a murder is the same crime. You know, that's how they get these guys. It's like, oh, yeah. A bunch of you went and shot this dude. Well, hey, I just tied up the guy.
Yeah.
Hey, oh, all I did was buy him the gun and that's drop him crazy. Off at the place. No, you're an accessory to murder. You knew what was going on. It's crazy to think that he's an accessory to 14 years of pedophilia, but I don't see how you see it any other way.
Yeah. I mean,
tear down that
only
statue.
14 years?
Well, 98? Dude, I'm sure more shit's going to come out.
No, I mean, let's say, how long was Sandusky coaching for Paterno?
Oh, yeah. And... Yeah, this is...
Like you said, you don't...
At 98, you don't just, 98 is when we first start seeing records and stuff kicking around.
You don't become a pedophile. Odds are it's a disease and you had that shit.
Oh, I'm sure he was doing it before then. And this is just the incident we know about.
Yeah.
What's to say that something didn't happen in 1985 during like the height of Jerry Sandusky when they were winning national championships or whatever year that was in the 80s? What's to say? Oh, it was probably... You know how much easier it was to cover up shit in the 80s? 98 is finally when you get some like audio recordings and some like emails and stuff like that.
It is a weird situation though, because I don't feel like it should have any effect on the sports programs at Penn State. Much like if a football coach for a team kills someone, that shouldn't affect the football team.
Right, but they're arguing that the culture was created to allow this man to become such a dictator, Joe Paterno, that he ran the city and just became this insane. Basically, the reason now I'm telling you why they would give them the death penalty. I don't even know how I feel about it completely. I see both sides of this argument. Their argument is that these people created this power structure of this basically dictator to rule over not only the entire sports program, but this entire university. And everyone just kind of bowed down to him, from the trustees to the president, to the athletic director, to the police commissioner. So they created a culture and a society that allowed the sports coach to become insanely powerful, that he was allowed to let this go. So the idea, it's an institutional lack of control. And that's the verbiage they use to give the death penalty to programs. You put this man on such a pedestal and made him such this dictator and gave him so much power and removed all sorts of checks and balances and blindly turned your head to his judgment that no one questioned his decision making. And they went along with his decision making about turning a blind eye to a pedophilia for a horrible piece of shit for 14 years, you lose the right as an institution to compete or to have someone. I mean, here, what's this in your mind or in, like, in anyone else's mind? What, they install another guy. Penn State finally turns the program around. Start winning championships. Well, start turning the corner. What's to say that they're not all going to buy in and say, hey, he's the next Joe Paterno. Oh, hey, slowly he's rising up. What's to say that there isn't a structure to stop that?
Yeah, I mean, but what's killing their football team going to do?
It's going to disgrace Joe Paterno's name forever. Yeah, and it's going to make people realize that what he did was insanely wrong.
Yeah.
And it'll hopefully get them to take down that statue and realize at the end of the day.
They haven't taken it down yet?
No. At the end of the day, it's about being decent people.
If I was one of the kids that got molested or a family member, I would rent a bulldozer and just drive through that.
That would be the first thing I would do.
How great would that be?
It's about maybe feeling...
It's like, what, are you going to arrest me? Arrest me for destroying property?
Yeah. It's about consequences. You know what I mean?
I get it.
It's about...
It's the same reason that you Sean take Payton away- got suspended for a year. I get it.
Right. And I don't know. Is that fair to all these kids that enjoy the football program and enjoy the...
Did you know, I saw a little blip. They actually had their second best year raising funds from donors.
Right, because people blindly support them.
$204 million.
Here's the thing. If I was the NCAA, that's why I'm giving the death penalty, is instead of people turning their back on Joe Paterno when this came out, they supported him more.
Yeah.
Look at the donations. They're coming in more. People rioted for Joe Paterno after this.
Well, I get defending him right away.
I don't know. I mean, I'm feel like I'm a sane person. You look at those facts.
No. Now, once things started to come out, it's one thing, but
even after that first thing.
On the surface, it appears that it originally appeared as if...
No. I mean, I was on it from day one, and I said, not that I'm some genius, but I said...
Oh, I was not defending
from
Paterno,
going to Penn
State. I could see if you were a current student, I could see where that came from.
Okay. But if you're the NCAA, that's why you're saying no more football. Because you guys don't even... When this shit first came out, you didn't have even the basic logic to realize, oh, what he did is bad. He should be disgraced. Instead, you supported him more? I mean,
so where is the ex-president in all this? The chancellor or whatever?
He should be,
I think he's in jail, right?
I don't know I don't think Graham Spanier's in jail. No. Only Curley and the other guy were the only ones charged.
I mean, this had to cross more than Paterno's desk or more than, you know, all the emails
are between the athletic director, Graham Spanier, the president.
They have to go to prison.
Yes. Institutional lack of control. It wasn't just one guy. And yeah, Joe Paterno was the most powerful man in Penn State.
Why would you put that in an email? God, people are so dumb.
Well, Joe Paterno didn't use email. So, but they use code words of like, we talked to Coach Paterno about, said guy, you know, it's like, all right.
I mean, we told him no more sleepovers.
It's like, yes, we barred him from the athletic facility.
I don't know. It's pretty crazy.
It's insane.
Yeah.
It's insanely unfortunate. All right, Ryan. Well, we're almost at NFL season, so.
No, let's save it, Sean.
We'll save it for a couple weeks here. Training camp is right upon us.
Yep.
Make sure you guys check out sportsgamblingpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter @gamblingpodcast, or you can follow me @greenroomshow or @kramercentric. Also, anyone in the Philadelphia area, I'll be, headlining a stand-up comedy show this Friday,
you,
July 20th, at the Underground Arts Theater in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I'll be doing a little stand-up, probably do some stand-up about Paterno and just sports in general, so make sure you check that out. And, of course, click through the Amazon page. You can go to Sports Gambling Podcast, hit that Amazon link. You can get jersey. I mean, they got a lot of NFL merch there. Pretty good prices, too, so make sure you check that out. And subscribe on iTunes, rate us on iTunes. That helps keep the podcast wheels a-moving. So for the Sports Gambling Podcast, I'm Sean Stacking the Money Green, and he's Ryan.
Real quick, Sean.
Sure.
We got to plug our fall football trip.
Okay.
So this is what I'm going to throw out there. So myself and Sean will be out there week four, right? I believe it's the weekend of September 29th, something
yep.
like that.
Whenever the Eagles-Giants play Sunday night.
If anyone can show up to Vegas, we'll plug where we're going to be watching games.
Sure.
And comes to that sports book, watches games with us. I will buy drinks all day for that person. Those drinks
right.
will be on the house.
That'll
for
be
anyone
awesome.
Who shows up.
So mark your calendars if you guys are planning. If you've never done that,
there's not too many things that are better in this world than waking up at 8 a.m, being tired as shit from a long night of gambling, getting a sweet spot in the sports book, and just kicking it all day. Of course,
fall,
headlined by the Eagles-Giants Sunday night game.
Fall is the perfect time to go out for Vegas because you can show up like Friday night, fly in, you can go out, do whatever, the typical Vegas stuff, the table games, if you're into the bar, club scene, whatever, wake up Saturday, do a nice Saturday of college gambling, do a little late night table games
again. Oh, and the
again.
Pool, don't forget that.
Pool, the weather is fine in the fall, it's warm enough for a pool that it's real. It's not like it's not the crazy heat of July. It's still pretty warm. That hanging at the pool feels great. And then you roll it into the strong Sunday. And if you're real degenerate, stick around for the Monday night game. So I recommend that wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Sports Gambling Podcast. Let it ride.